Welcome to Lena Live, hosted by Professor Lena Miermont, and I'm producer Julian Lampert. The Lena Live Radio Hour is presenting a multi-part series about Calvary Hospital, one of the gracious supporters of our program. Today we're going to listen to Nancy D'Agostino, who is the President of Patient Community Services at Calvary. Ms. D'Agostino was the first staff member at Calvary Hospital whom we spoke to, and the eloquence with which she spoke to us really set the tone to all of the subsequent interviews that we had with Calvary's remarkable staff. Let's listen to Nancy D'Agostino speak. We're here with Nancy D'Agostino, the Vice President of Community Patient Services at Calvary Hospital. Could you tell us about your job? What does your job at Calvary entail?
The Community Services Division of Calvary encompasses all of the programs that Calvary has brought into existence in order to care for people who wish to and are able to remain at home. So we provide services for patients who are on our home care program, perhaps a little bit stable, and then we also have a very large group of patients that we take care of through our hospice program. Sometimes they're patients who are in need of care prior to coming to our inpatient facility, so we keep them home, and our nurses and social workers and everybody, our team of Calvary people, visit them at home and help them to transition to the inpatient services when the very end comes or when the situation occurs that it's not a good fit for them to remain at home. On the other hand, we also have a huge number of patients who wish to go home and stay home and die at home. So currently we take care of more than 300 patients on a daily basis who are being cared for in their homes really all over New York City and the metropolitan area.
That's remarkable. How did Calvary at Home begin?
You know, that's actually a story that very much relates to the evolution of Calvary services. When the hospital moved from a smaller facility elsewhere in the Bronx to here in its present facility in the Northeast Bronx, they saw a little bit of a change in the patient population. And they had more patients who were able to come in, get stabilized, and then able to go home. And at the time, those patients left Calvary, and when it was time for them to come back in, they did. But the board of directors and the administration thought that it would be a good plan in order to have patients be able to be discharged from Calvary, go home with services from Calvary and establishing a continuum of services, and then, as appropriate, when they needed to come back in, they would. So that was the basic origins. However, now the majority of our patient referrals come from other institutions throughout New York City. So what began as just a service really for the small number that were being discharged from Calvary has really grown into the kind of organization which for many is their initial entry into the Calvary continuum of services. So it's grown a lot in the last 30 years, but I think it's a very exciting part of what Calvary is able to offer to people.
If I just can integrate a little thing, I find that this is the heart of the family connection, because obviously when you're going into certain institution, you interrupt this family life, which already was greatly interrupted by the person who is ill.
Sure.
So I felt with my own experience with my father that somehow you manage to cover that seam and you cover that border, that it's almost like a flow. Home becomes hospital and hospital becomes home.
And in fact, leading from what Lena just said, one important question that I think a lot of people have is how would home care differ from inpatient care? In other words, is there there may be a preconception that many people think that the inpatient care would be more sophisticated,
than the in-home care. So how would you, is there in fact a difference, and how could you distinguish?
That's a question that I get an awful lot, and I'll start out by saying that I spent 20 years working in the inpatient here at Calvary, so I think I have a pretty good idea of how we, how the programs inpatient look in comparison to the at-home. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about patients at the end of life is that people make compromises and sacrifices no matter where they are. If they come into the inpatient facility, as you said, Lena, it interrupts the family situation. They're no longer home. So when they come into the inpatient setting, they are going to have access to 24-hour nursing, 24-hour availability of physicians who can absolutely more quickly deal with symptoms that are going on. However, when patients are at home, they're situations are a little bit different. They're not certainly not as isolated. They're in their own homes, whatever that might be. They're a private home, an apartment, a group setting, a nursing home, but they're in their homes, surrounded by the things that they love, surrounded by the people that they love. They can eat whenever they want. People can come to visit. And it's interesting that the severity of symptoms appears to be a little bit less when people are in their own home setting. Mm-hmm. So that being said, there are sacrifices, but then there are also true benefits for each of them. Is the quality of care the same? Absolutely. We know Calvary has a long history. I mean, we've been around for over 110 years, so that when the at-home programs came into existence, we knew we had a very important and very high standard that we had to live up to. So as a result, we take that very seriously. We also take the fact that people have entrusted the care of their loved ones to us. They've invited us into their home. And that isn't something that we should take personally, and that we should take very lightly. It is very personal for us. We are invited into people's homes. And I can tell you just from experience, it's a vastly different whole environment to care for people at home. I think the best that we can do is to hopefully match the patient needs with the best setting for that person at that particular time. And it changes over time. You're nodding. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I didn't know that taking, so to speak, Calvary to one's home, that the level of care, the sophistication of the care is essentially the same. Mm-hmm. That's extremely important for people to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
The incredible diversity of our city, cultural, religious, for someone who can, especially someone who is devoutly religious, who is not, for example, Roman Catholic, what would you say to that individual who is considering Calvary but may have some hesitation in terms of to what extent will her or his faith and culture be represented here?
That's actually a challenge, I think, for many individuals who hear the name Calvary and do associate it with being very Roman Catholic. And certainly we are a Catholic organization.
Yes.
However, we are certainly not only respectful, we really embrace the culture of the individual, not only from a religious or an ethnic point of view, but really for the individual patient. Just because someone is of a certain background and religion, not everybody fits into those little slots. So we have learned over the years not to make any kinds of assumptions. What we have found is that if this is an important part of what people would like to address or have considered during the care, it comes up very early in the conversations. And in order to respond to the wonderfully diverse city that we live in, we actually have staff who are representative of almost all every continent except Greenland. We have people who are representative of all major faiths, multi-linguistic people. It is a challenge to find staff in order to meet the needs, but I think it's something that has to be in the forefront of the planning for Calvary, not only now, but as we go forward. It's something that we always have to be considering going forward. But I do believe that we are, it's not even just respectful. I think that we encourage that individuality because it can make the experience that much more personal to the individual. What I would say to people is that we are, as a staff, as different as the people out in New York City and as different as our patients, so we would certainly encourage them to call and feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And if I may add, there's no secret we're living in such a rushed world. We indeed don't have time sometimes for this wonderfully important asset as a cultural breath. And what you just described is right there. You have this cultural exchange. It's a mutual learning, mutual nourishment, expansion. And I believe that when people are faced with the discomfort, there are certain unknown to this individual qualities which are comes out. And his cultural breadth, his cultural orientation becomes that much stronger. And I believe that this makes the whole experience very mutually nourished between the patients, families, and your staff.
You know, the interesting thing is that I don't think people ever really change. They just become a little bit more of what they were. And we find that a lot at home, where people who perhaps have not worshipped formally in a particular religion at the end of life do want to make that connection again. Or individuals who have not really been cognizant of their cultural patterns, and all of a sudden holidays become a little bit more intense because of they want to make memories for themselves but also for families. It's not only a challenge, it's actually pretty exciting to be invited into people's homes, and some of the stories that our staff will come back with about cultural practices and family patterns and things that people do, it's really fascinating. We need to be open to that, and I know that we are. I know that we are, yeah.
Let's hear a brief message from one of our supporters and the subject of our multi-part series, Calvary Hospital.
Dear Calvary Hospital, my dad was at the end of his life, suffering from pancreatic cancer. I knew there was only one place that could relieve his pain and ours as well, Calvary Hospital. His wish was to die at home, so it was Calvary Home Hospice that provided Dad with the quality of life he deserved, filled with exceptional comfort and warmth. He passed on with dignity and grace, and we were all there with him. A year later, my mom needed the same Calvary care. And once again, Calvary's expert home hospice staff was there for us. My parents gave me unqualified love their entire lives. There was no better way for me to return this love than with Calvary's care. Yours truly, Deborah DiGregorio.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Our world-renowned hospice program brings our expert end-of-life care right into your home. Call us at 718-518-2465.
We're back with our guest, Ms. Nancy D'Agostino, the Vice President of Patient Community Services at Calvary Hospital.
For for a family considering Calvary, what would be the first step towards coming here?
I'm going to answer that by saying that there are probably two steps that we would recommend. First, I think we need I think it's important that families recognize that it's good for them to get information. Every week, we get probably at least a dozen family members who call. They say, my family member doesn't need services right now. We don't need anything right now, but I want to get some information. And I just applaud those people for gathering the information. Unfortunately, and Lena, you talked about it being a rushed society. We have so many patients who are, in a matter of a day, have gone from an active treatment mode to where the physician or team will say, you know, there really are no more options for treatment, we would recommend hospice. And that's a lot to take in a day. They're forced then to make a decision very quickly. So we're always very happy when someone calls well ahead of time to say, I want to find out what the options are. So I would encourage everybody to, if they are faced with perhaps life-limiting illness, or their loved one is getting more frail and elderly and things just aren't looking that good, to call, get information, not only about Calvary, but just about what benefits are available. But I think your question really is, if someone is faced with having to make a decision, what do they need to do? Calvary has a number of different ways in which people can make a referral. The easiest for people, perhaps, is to pick up the phone. And one of the good things about Calvary is that it's answered 24/7. There's always a live person. From the inpatient services, certainly the hospital is open 24 hours a day. For our at-home people, we have many inquiries, not only late at night, but also on the weekends from loved ones who will call, and there's always a nurse available to call back and give them information, give them options. We certainly, we can walk people through the process of this is what we need to do, but in most cases, we are able to get to that person either that same day or the next day, if that's as quickly as we're able to get out to people.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent to know that there's a straight arrow.
Absolutely.
Communication.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Nancy D'Agostino, the Vice President of Patient Services at Calvary Hospital, and would like to know, how did you come to Calvary?
I've stopped answering how long I've been at Calvary, but I will tell you, I've been at Calvary for 33 years. I actually came, I had been working in an active treatment place, I'm a nurse, and I came because I thought, oh wow, Calvary has such a great reputation, it'll be good for my resume for a year. But when I came, this was the one place that I knew put patients and families first. Insignificant kinds of things, but I remember having one of the gentlemen from housekeeping who was fixing something in one of the offices, and he packed everything up in the middle of the job. He said, I have to go fix something in one of the patient rooms. But it's that kind of culture, that the patient needs come first. So even as what I know was a very young nurse, I realized that this was the kind of place that I knew that really did put patients and families first. I also knew that it was the kind of place that dealt with a very important part of people's lives. And I guess I wanted to be part of that, and I've not regretted staying for as long as I have.
This is not an easy question to answer. Could write a book to answer it. How has Calvary, working at Calvary, affected your life philosophically, emotionally, intellectually, in any which way, perhaps starting with the most immediate way that you could think?
I know it sounds very trite to say that it does make you appreciate things, but it does. All of us go home to our regular lives, but you can't put aside 8 hours, 40 hours a week, every year, and not reflect on the patients that come through the doors here or the patients that we care for at home, and you can't not have them in the back of your minds. I guess I look at things a little differently. I am a little bit more hopeful of positive things for my own family and friends. I think I value relationships a lot more. But I also know that life is short and that we really need to be appreciative of the times that we have. When we take care of a young mother who has toddlers at home, I think to myself, my goodness, how thankful I am that was not my children. And it makes you appreciate things. It makes you appreciate things a little bit more. Professionally, I think it makes you strive to be as patient-centered as you can. There are lots of changes going on in healthcare, and it's hard to hold on to that.
Yes.
But we have to, and I know that being within this environment, none of us are alone in trying to do that. And I hear the frustration sometimes from people from other institutions who are who perhaps are in an institution that doesn't have as strong of a sense of culture and mission of putting the patient first and meeting the patient and family where they are and allowing them the time to heal. And I know that's a funny thing because our patients die, but allowing the family relationships to heal. We're fortunate that we're able to do that. So as a professional, I feel that it's so important that we, wherever we can, try to hold on to that. But working at Calvary has been a big part of my life. I've been doing it for a long time, and it does flavor a lot of what I do.
You put it so ethically beautiful in terms of saying about healing when people are dying. And there is a union of opposites, because in one sense, person is dying, but as we would say, spirit is very much alive, mm-hmm. if anything becomes even stronger. And you made it very transparent, something which is literally very hard to put in words. And I feel that you described the not only your personal experience, but the aura in the hospital, which is more than aware how this physiological disappearance, short of speak, yet increasing this awareness of a spiritual connection. And that is something which I wanted to thank you for, the way you put it. It's not a simple wording to use and to address that situation.
Absolutely, and continuing on what Lena just said, I'm sure, well, that was certainly, in our case, the situation when we were considering Calvary for my grandfather, going beyond the medicine and the spiritual, emotional component, which has such a powerfully healing property. At Calvary, it's the healing takes on a more complex dimension. But I wanted to ask you something that you referred to in connection with home care, Calvary at home, and you mentioned that the severity of symptoms are diminished, is less among patients. How could you address a family considering Calvary to be sure that the emotional, the psychological component will be very much in place with coming at Calvary? What kind of services, psychological services, do you offer not only to the patient but to the family?
That probably is one of the unique features of Calvary that makes us as good as we are. We devote everything to this effort, and as a result, we don't get distracted. For our patients who are at home, each of the patients has a specific team of professionals, and the four key people are the nurse, the social work, the pastoral care provider, and our physician. And all of them are available to make visits and with schedules so that there's not overlap unless we want there to be overlap. And I would begin by saying that the emotional and psychosocial needs of the patient and family are met to a certain degree by all of the team members. We recognize that we're not in an inpatient setting where the social worker is just down the hall. So nurses have to be able to do some of that psychosocial work. Everybody kind of has a little bit of overlap. But that being said, the one thing we first of all need for our patients and families certainly to be open to the emotional support that we are able to provide to them, and I think most people are. I think when people get to know the individual coming into their home, there is a sense of more wanting to open up. Our social work team, many of them are certified in hospice and palliative care, giving them a certain level of expertise in dealing with pre-bereavement issues as well as counseling for families. And certainly our spiritual care, our pastoral care providers, that's not associated with religion. It may be, but much more of a broader sense.
Yes.
Our physicians who go to visit, we sometimes will have the physician go because the family needs to hear what everyone else has said, but needs it from the physician. Our feeling is that we need to be able to instill confidence in our patients and families that they can do this at home, but at the same time, we need to be able to support them. From a very functional point of view, having people available, answering the phones right away and not having people go through a menu of, you know, if you have a problem, press one, that kind of thing. They know that their immediate needs are going to be met on the phone. But it's the presence. It's the availability. We try very hard to have our staff visit patients a little bit more than what is generally thought of when you think of people in either visiting a home care program or in a hospice program. But it's the availability and just being present to people, sitting back and listening to what they have to say.
It's incredible medicine in itself.
It is. Yeah. It is. It is. People have to be able to tell their story, sometimes more than once. And certainly we go in with lots of admission forms. But if you go in and sit back, you don't even have to ask a question because people will answer all of your questions by telling you the stories.
In this time, and you mentioned of some of the unpredictability of the course of our medical care system, and just to make a little detour, it's very hard to find nearly perfect system because of the challenges, because of a certain amount of medical history of people. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly hard not only to address, but sometimes to face this amount and accumulation of the issues. And what you're describing seems that you're compensating from a human side, from your dedication, from your desire to put patients' human needs to such a high pedestal that that system sometimes scary sound to many becomes if not less of the issue, but it is not a sound as a threat. So your the whole ambiance of your care, of your participation, the fact that the nurse might be becoming a little as a member of the family for the moment, that is just as Julian said, is a tremendous medicine. And I would go further, you are playing that critical role of being there for someone who needs it at that very moment.
We'll be right back after we hear this message from one of our supporters and the subject of our multi-part series, Calvary Hospital.
Dear Calvary Hospital, James Lee was a true hero. Saving lives was something he always wanted to do, whether as a paratrooper for the 82nd Airborne or as a New York City fireman. They called him Jimmy. I was proud to call him Dad. But when terminal illness ravaged his body, this man's man knew that this was one life that could not be saved, not even by me, an experienced nurse. It just wasn't fair that he had to suffer like this. But then Calvary stepped in. You relieved his enormous pain and not only gave him the peace and comfort he deserved, but you also gave me and my family a chance to enjoy his final days, smiling and laughing, together, one last time. How can we ever forget what you mean to us? Yours truly, Colleen Lee.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital, where life continues. Call us at 718-518-2000. Thank you.
Let's return to our final segment with Ms. Nancy D'Agostino, the Vice President of Community Patient Services at Calvary Hospital.
We're speaking with Nancy D'Agostino, the Vice President of Patient Care Services at Calvary Hospital in New York City. Actually, before we speak about that, I would like to ask about something that I understand to be the case, that after the patient has passed, you also offer psychological services to families.
Yes, we do.
And that's extremely important for families, individuals to know. Could you talk about that?
Surely. The bereavement services that are provided through Calvary are absolutely tremendous. We actually start our bereavement services before the patient has died. In terms of an assessment of what's going on with the family, sometimes there are small children involved. And so we start our bereavement services before by gathering the information and hopefully trying to counsel patients, families, so that they can be a little bit more prepared. That being said, all of our family members are enrolled in our bereavement services for 13 months. And when I say that the services, that can be anything from, depending upon the needs of the family members, it can be anything from phone calls, mailings around certain times of the year, to engagement in support groups, which are very, very frequently offered here at Calvary and also over in Brooklyn. And then perhaps even visits. We also do make referrals for those who are having severely complicated kinds of grief. But the bereavement services, I think, offer the opportunity for people to transition to what's going to happen after. You know, the care from Calvary doesn't stop the day that the patient dies. If it did, I think that would be very hard for families to either walk out of Calvary, where they have perhaps felt that they've lived, maybe they have lived there for the last couple of weeks, their loved one dies, and then they walk out with no reason to ever go back. Same situation, I think, occurs in the homes when they've had a steady someone coming, you know, a couple of times a week, and they've gotten into their patterns, and all of a sudden that person dies. To have that relationship end, I think, can be very unnerving for people. So I think the bereavement services, we try very hard to participate or attend, in some cases, officiate at funerals and wakes and those kinds of things. But more importantly, we try to be in touch with people as they make their way through the first year and 1 month. It's hard for people who have lost their father to go through the first Father's Day. And they may not recognize that, so at that time we have specific mailings that we will send out to people. It's just a good way for people to transition. If after 13 months they still need support, certainly that would go on, but we find that most people are able to do that. One of the things that everyone should know, though, is that our bereavement services here through Calvary are available to anyone, not only the people who are cared for through Calvary. So that if people just in the community are in need, they have had a sudden death, a loved one has died in another institution, on another hospice program, and we are the place that they would like to look to for support, they can call into the bereavement services. And we get calls all the time from people who've experienced losses. The other thing is that families are all over. So people may have lost a loved one down in Florida, but then they move back to New York, but they're still feeling that loss. They need to associate themselves with someone. Everyone should know that Calvary is, that's also a very important part of what we do.
The only harder thing it is than to have one's life end in difficult circumstances is to know someone, to have a family member who is going through that. So to hear what you just said is extraordinarily important for people to realize.
There is also a, I apologize, there's also a bereavement program that Calvary offers on an annual basis, which is not a support group for patients and families, but it is an opportunity for other professionals to come in and learn how they can support individuals who have experienced a loss. So the kinds of people who would come to that might be guidance counselors from schools, funeral directors who have come, other mental health professionals, people who you don't always associate with death, but we all know teachers who have their kids in their classes have experienced a death, and it helps to prepare them as well. And it's a wonderful program, probably been in existence for 15 years, something like that, and it has trained thousands of people to be better prepared to respond to human resource people in different companies, just to be able to have a better sense of how to approach or deal with someone in their own workplace who has experienced a death.
And if I can add, this is so much about the connections, and there's no secret. Some people, especially young children, have their own way of dealing with death, and most people are afraid to talk about this. They take it in their own close to their heart and mind religious way. Some people can take it in certain behavior, but there is endless amount of variations, and it sounds as if you almost know where, how, and why to approach each individual soul in this moment of a transition. And I particularly wanted to stress and to thank you for considering children, and that your roots, almost like I would say symphony orchestra, who will add another musician because that particular piece needs that extra musician to reach that particularly high note or maybe hidden soul. It sounds as if you are not only open to that, but you're exercising this with the devotion and with a tremendous help at this critical moment of a young heart to experience something which only an adult can experience.
It is so difficult for all of us to think of little ones suffering a severe loss. No kid should have to go through that. But the reality is that some of them do. And when that happens, we have some of our staff who are specifically trained in dealing with children's bereavement and who've had experience in other kinds of settings dealing with children. They are a very resilient little group of people. However, it's been rewarding to see our staff work with young children to help and work with the parents, because as you said, very many adults would say, "Well, we don't want to talk about, we don't want to scare them," but the reality is that the death is going to occur, and it really would be best if we could help to prepare them. And it's always very rewarding, very bittersweet to hear some of the comments and some of the things that have happened with children who have helped to be there for their loved one. I remember one, unfortunately, again, another young mother who had three young girls, and she had done a superb job of making wonderful memories with her girls because she knew she was sick and probably wouldn't be around as they got older. But after the young mother died, I think that the little girl was the one who was maybe six or seven. She came running and she said to me, she said to her father, "I have to brush her hair." The social worker and I decided that I would help to make her look perfect when she went to heaven. And the social worker who's involved was involved with that. This is probably going back 6 or 7 years. She still hears from that young lady now. She's not even a little girl anymore, but who has a memory, a positive memory of helping her mom at that time of need and making those memories. Man, there's no doubt about it. When children suffer a terrible loss, not a parent, a very close grandparent or anyone, it's a loss to them. But if they can have some memory that they have helped to make, I think that it works well. But that's tough work, working with kids. It's tough work.
I never met this mother. I never met those children. But I did meet you. This example I never will forget.
One more question. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Nancy D'Agostino. What event in your childhood, or if not childhood, in your formative years, was there which had such a profound effect on your life that where you are today is either directly or indirectly a result?
Wow. I can think of many as it relates to my work here. I have to say the losses that my family and I have experienced. Mm-hmm. From my own experience, I often will say to families who have experienced an illness and all of a sudden find themselves in this kind of a crisis, it almost feels like an avalanche. Things start very slowly, and then all of a sudden you're enveloped in this terrible situation, and you look back and you say, how did we get here? How did we make the little decisions that went all along, and all of a sudden we're in this situation? And I am always very aware of that when I talk to families, because most of the time we're not talking about short illnesses. Most of our patients have had an illness over a prolonged period of time. But I guess like everyone else, you know, in my life we've had some bad losses. I do remember always listening to my mother, who lost one of her sisters at the age of 30. And I know how much that had an impact on my mother and her other sisters and her brothers. And I guess in looking back at that, it always struck me as how that was such an important memory, and it became such a part of their lives that it always reinforces to me that this is a time when people are never going to forget. I often tell people, you will remember what you wore the day that your grandfather died, where you parked, how you walked in, who did you meet. You remember details that you don't from yesterday because it wasn't a significant day. There's nothing that we can do here at Calvary that might not be remembered. And I'm always kind of aware of that because it is such an important time for people. But I think that, and I think if you talk to most of our staff, they would say the same thing. The experiences that we have had of loss and just in our own lives has somewhat affected how we, the decisions that we've made to make our place of work here, Calvary.
We listen to the Vice President of Patient Community Services at Calvary Hospital, Ms. Nancy D'Agostino. We thank her for joining us, and we thank you, as always, for listening. Join us next week for another broadcast of the Lena Live Radio Hour. Until then.